Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today we are focusing our lens on a very specific and I think very interesting slice of the tech world.
Mm-hmm.
We're heading out to the West Coast, but we're not talking about Silicon Valley. We are zooming in on Orange County, California.
The Silicon Coast, as some people are, you know, trying to brand it.
Right. And you think of places like the Irvine Spectrum or Newport Center. And I mean, usually you think high-end retail, real estate, maybe lifestyle brands.
Sure.
But there is a massive shift happening there in enterprise software. And it all centers around a question that I think, well, anyone in tech, really anyone running a business needs to be asking right now.
Okay.
We all know about adding AI features to things, you know, slapping a chatbot on a website, using an email writer. That's old news.
It's table stakes at this point.
Exactly. But the real question is, what happens when AI isn't just a feature you glue on? What happens when AI is the actual foundation?
That is the pivotal question. It's a difference between, say, a renovation and a whole new construction.
Right. And to answer that, we are unpacking a really comprehensive guide produced by Technegion. It's titled AI Native Software Development: The Future of Orange County Enterprise.
Hmm. And it makes a pretty aggressive claim right out of the gate.
It does. It argues that we're moving past the AI-enabled era entirely and entering the AI-native era. And supposedly, this distinction isn't just, you know, semantics. It's cutting operational costs by 35 to 60%.
Which are just massive numbers.
Huge. So our mission today is to stress test that claim. We need to figure out what AI native actually means, you know, mechanically, why it saves so much money, and how businesses are actually pulling this off without, well, breaking everything.
It's a great agenda. And to start, we really have to get a little technical for a second about how software is built.
Hmm.
Because AI native, it isn't just a marketing slogan. It implies a whole different architecture.
So define it for us. What's the litmus test?
The source uses a car analogy that I think is really helpful, but I'd like to take it a step further. Imagine you have a standard gas-powered car. That's your traditional software. It runs on an internal combustion engine. Now, if you bolt a spoiler onto the back, maybe add a heads-up display, It looks cooler, it has new features. That's AI-enabled.
Right, so you have your legacy code, your engine, and you're just making an API call to ChatGPT on the side to do a summary or something.
Exactly. The core engine is still the same old rigid code. AI native is an electric vehicle.
Oh.
You didn't just swap the engine. You redesigned the chassis, the weight distribution, the braking system. Everything is built around the battery. In software terms, the AI is the battery. The application literally cannot function without that intelligence at its core.
I want to dig into that rigid code part you mentioned, because traditionally coding is deterministic, right? If X, then Y.
Precisely. Okay. That's the old way. And this is where the distinction is most visible. Traditional software is deterministic. It follows a decision tree.
Yeah.
The source brings up the classic customer service chatbot as a perfect example of this. And we've all hated these things.
Oh, absolutely. You type in, I need a refund, and the bot just scans for the keyword refund.
And it sends you a link to the policy page every time.
Right. But if you type, I'm frustrated because the package arrived wet and I'm worried about mold, so I don't want a replacement, I just want my money back, the old bot just crashes. It says, I didn't understand that.
Because the logic is rigid. It's looking for specific triggers. It doesn't understand the nuance of mold implies damage,
right,
which implies refund, but specifically, no replacement.
Whereas an AI native system isn't running a decision tree. It's probabilistic. It's reading the intent.
Exactly. It's an agent. It understands context, sentiment, and history. It reads that complaint and goes, okay, the customer's angry. That's sentiment. The issue is damage. That's context. And they specifically ruled out a replacement. That's intent. It resolves it like a human would.
So the distinction is AI enabled matches words. AI native constructs meaning.
That's a perfect way to put it. And the guide highlights three key characteristics that define these native systems. First is continuous learning. Traditional software basically rots. It just stays the same until a developer writes a patch. AI native software improves based on usage data.
So it's anti-fragile. The more you stress it, the better it gets.
Yes. Second is contextual awareness. It knows who you are and what you did yesterday. And third is natural language interfaces. The GUI, the graphical user interface, you know, the buttons and menus we've used for 30 years, it starts to disappear.
You just talk to it.
You just talk to it.
Okay, so that's the definition. It sounds superior, obviously, but I want to circle back to those ROI numbers.
Yeah.
35 to 60% savings. I mean, that sounds incredible, but as a business owner, I'd be asking, where exactly is that money coming from? Is it just firing people?
It's the elephant in the room, isn't it? The source material breaks this down pretty granularly, and while, yeah, labor reduction is part of it, it's actually more about workflow collapse.
Workflow collapse. I like that term. Break that down for me.
Okay, let's look at the stats they provide for data processing. They claim 55 to 70% savings here. Traditionally, data processing is a human staring at a PDF invoice, finding the total line, and typing that number into Excel. That's a workflow with multiple steps and, frankly, high error rates.
And high boredom rates.
Right. An AI-native system doesn't just help the human do that. It extracts, validates, and enters the data instantly. The workflow collapses from 5 minutes to 5 milliseconds. The cost saving comes from speed and error reduction as much as from headcount.
The source also mentioned customer support, reducing the need for agents by 45 to 60%. This is where that firing people fear usually kicks in.
Mm.
But the Technician Guide spins this differently, doesn't it?
It does. They emphasize the shift to high-value activities. Look, nobody goes into customer service because they love resetting passwords. That is just drudgery.
No, of course not.
So if the AI handles the password resets and the where is my order queries, the human agents are left handling the complex, emotional, high-stakes issues.
So the human becomes the escalation point for empathy, basically.
Exactly. The argument is that you aren't paying humans to be robots anymore. Mm-hmm. You're paying them to be humans.
I can buy that. It transforms the job description. Now let's ground this. The guide specifically focuses on Orange County industries. Real estate, healthcare, SaaS. This isn't theoretical. This is happening in Irvine and Newport right now. So how does this look in the wild?
Let's start with real estate. I mean, it is the industry in Southern California.
It's practically the religion of Orange County.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Now, traditional tech in real estate is something like Zillow. You look at comps. What did the house next door sell for? It's reactive.
Right.
AI native real estate tools are predictive. They're analyzing massive data sets to identify likely sellers before they even list.
Wait, how can it possibly know that?
It connects the dots. Maybe it sees a change in employment status on LinkedIn, combined with the fact that they've been in the home for 7 years, which is the average turnover time, combined with local school district changes. It creates a nurturing sequence for the agent.
So instead of cold calling the whole zip code, the agent gets a ping saying, call the Smiths, they're likely thinking about moving.
Exactly. And the valuation models are far more sophisticated. It's not just square footage. It's factoring in traffic noise patterns, microeconomic shifts in the neighborhood. I mean, it gives the agent a superpower.
Okay, let's move to healthcare. This one feels much higher stakes. If Netflix recommends the wrong movie, I'm annoyed. If an AI recommends the wrong diagnosis,
you're in trouble. And that is why the source emphasizes a concept called explainability, or XAI.
This is the black box problem, right?
Right. Deep learning models are notoriously opaque. You put data in, magic happens, and an answer comes out. In healthcare, that is totally unacceptable. A doctor cannot look at a patient and say, well, we're operating because the algorithm said so.
They'd get sued into oblivion.
Exactly. So AI native apps in healthcare are built differently. They are designed to show their work. I recommend this treatment because of these three markers in the blood work and this history of medication.
So it's decision support, not decision making.
Correct. And the other massive piece here, especially for California, is compliance. IPAI is strict. California's privacy laws, the CCPA, are even stricter. The guide argues you can't just patch privacy into an AI model later. It has to be part of the foundational architecture.
Which brings us to the third sector, SaaS, software as a service. This is huge in the Irvine Spectrum area. What's the AI native play there?
It's mostly about automated onboarding. Think about the last time you signed up for a complex software tool.
I stared at a blank dashboard for 20 minutes and then I closed the tab.
That is the blank slate problem. Usually you need a human to walk you through it, or you watch hours of tutorials. An AI native SaaS platform solves this by asking, who are you? Hmm. If you say, I'm a florist, it completely reconfigures the dashboard for a florist's inventory needs. If you say, I'm a contractor, it sets up for project bids.
So the software adapts to the user rather than the user having to learn the software.
That's that contextual awareness again. It reduces the time to value, which is the most critical metric in SaaS.
Okay, I want to pivot to a section of the source material that genuinely surprised me. I actually thought it was a typo at first. I saw the acronym GEO.
Ah, yes. GEO.
I thought, surely they mean SEO, but no, Generative Engine Optimization. Explain this, because this sounds like it breaks the entire internet marketing model.
It might. I mean, we all know SEO, search engine optimization. That's the game of trying to get your website to the top of Google's blue links so people click on it.
Right. Keywords, backlinks, all that stuff.
Well, the source argues that search is fundamentally changing. Okay. Look at ChatGPT or Google's new AI overviews, what they call SGE. When you ask a question now, you don't get a list of links. You get an answer. A paragraph.
Which is great for the user, but terrible for the website owner. If the AI gives the answer, nobody clicks the link. Nobody visits the site.
Exactly. The traffic just evaporates. So GEO is the strategy of surviving in a world with no clicks. You aren't trying to get traffic anymore. You're trying to become the source that the AI quotes.
You want the robot to say, according to your company.
Precisely.
How on earth do you optimize for that?
The guide outlines a few tactics. One is technical. Structured data. You have to format your content in a very specific hierarchy so the machine can easily parse and understand it. If your data is messy, the AI just ignores you.
Okay.
But the more interesting one, especially for our listeners in Orange County, is local relevance.
How does that work for an AI?
Well, LLMs, large language models, they value specificity. If you're writing generic content about IT support, you're competing with the entire world. But if you reference specific Irvine business districts, local regulations, the 405 freeway corridors,
right. The
AI tags you as a geographic authority.
So when someone asks, best IT support near Irvine Spectrum, the AI pulls you up because you've proven you actually know the area.
Exactly. You have to write for the machine's trust, not just the human's attention.
That is a paradigm shift. We're moving from the attention economy to the authority economy.
That's a brilliant way to phrase it.
Okay, let's get practical. I'm a business leader. I'm listening to this. I'm scared of the decay of my old software, and I want those 60% savings. But building an AI native system sounds expensive, complicated, and risky. How do you actually do it?
The Technigian guide is very grounded here. They explicitly warn against trying to boil the ocean. They suggest a three-phase approach.
Walk us through it.
Phase one is assessment and planning. And the most critical part here is checking your data. AI is only as good as the data it's fed.
Right.
If your internal records are a mess, duplicates, missing fields, unstructured text, you cannot build an AI system. It's garbage in, garbage out, but at hyperspeed.
So clean your house before you invite the robot over.
Essential. Phase two is pilot implementation. Pick a low-risk, high-value target. Do not try to overhaul your entire ERP system on day one. Pick something like an internal document search tool.
Something where if it hallucinates or breaks, it doesn't bankrupt the company?
Exactly. Prove the value, then scale, which is phase three, scaling and optimization. And this connects back to continuous learning. You launch the pilot, gather the real-world data, and use that to fine-tune the model.
Now, there was a specific argument in the source about who builds this. Technigian is an OC-based company, so obviously they have a bias, but they make a pretty strong logical case against outsourcing this development overseas. Why is AI development so different from standard web dev in that regard?
It comes down to the iterative nature of AI. In traditional software, you can write a spec sheet. You say, I need a login button here, a database there. You send it to a team in a different time zone. They build it, send it back. It works.
It's like assembling furniture. You just follow the instructions.
Right. But AI is discovery. You don't know exactly how the model will behave until you start testing it. It requires whiteboard sessions. It requires a lot of back and forth. You know, the AI is being too aggressive here. Let's dial back the temperature. That is very hard to do with a 12-hour time difference.
And I imagine the legal stuff plays a role, too.
Huge. We mentioned CCPA earlier. If you hire a dev team that isn't intimately familiar with California privacy law, they might build you a system that is illegal from day one.
Yeah.
And because AI is often a black box, you might not even know it's non-compliant until you get audited.
That's a nightmare scenario. So the argument is local partners for high context, high regulation builds.
Precisely.
We've covered the what, the why, and the how. I want to close by looking at the next. The guide looks ahead to 2026 and beyond. What's coming down the pipe that we haven't talked about yet?
Three big trends are identified as the next wave.
Yeah.
First, multimodal AI.
Multimodal, break that down.
Right now, most business AI is text-based. You type, it types. Multimodal means the system processes text, video, audio, and images simultaneously.
Give me a use case.
Imagine a manufacturing floor in Santa Ana. You could have an AI that listens to the sound of the machinery and watches the video feed. It could detect a bearing is about to fail because it hears a specific frequency change and sees a vibration, then correlates that with the maintenance logs, which is text, to diagnose the problem.
That's incredible. It uses all the senses.
The second trend is agentic AI. We touched on this, but it's the transition from chatbots to agents.
What's the functional difference?
A chatbot talks. An agent does. A chatbot can tell you which flight is cheapest. An agentic AI can go into the airline system, book the flight, put it on your calendar, email your invoice to accounting, and then monitor the flight for delays to rebook you automatically.
Autonomous execution of multi-step workflows.
Yes. It essentially has hands.
And the third one?
Edge AI. This is about moving the intelligence out of the cloud and onto the device, the edge.
Why would we want to do that? Isn't the cloud more powerful?
The cloud is powerful, but it's slow because of latency, and it's less private. If you are a hospital, you might not want patient data leaving the premises. If you run the AI locally on the server or even on the iPad itself, the data never leaves the room. It's faster and more secure.
So, looking at these three together, the software of the future sees and hears everything. That's multimodal. It can take action on its own. That's agentic. And it lives right in our pocket. That's edge.
That is the trajectory.
It's a lot to process. If we had to boil this whole deep dive down for the executive listening on their commute right now, what is the one thing they need to take away?
I think the synthesis is this. We are moving from software that is programmed to software that learns. For 50 years, we have told computers exactly what to do. Now we are building systems that figure out what to do based on our goals.
It's a shift from instruction to intention.
Beautifully said. And I'll leave you with this final thought, which really struck me from the source. In a world where AI-native software evolves daily based on usage, getting smarter, faster, and more efficient every single day, If your business systems are static, are they actually decaying?
That is a... Well, on that slightly terrifying but highly motivating note, we're going to wrap it up. I hope this gave you a better handle on the difference between just bolting on a spoiler and actually building a new engine.
Check your engine, everyone.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.